Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Al Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 29.5. NASDAQ Futures down 140. Not the start to September we were looking for, but it's what we've got. Sometimes you, what's the song say, Ricky? You can't always get what you want, but you may find that you get what you need or something like that.
That's right, man.
I don't know if we need a sell off, but that's kind of what we're getting here. Do we have the Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. Hey, by the way, something came across my desk over the holiday weekend.
Hope not a cockroach.
Well, it could be a cockroach about to soil up the market some. So, you've probably heard of this thing called the basis trade, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any idea how big it is?
You know what? We were kind of speculating with that last week on Russell. It's I know it's big, but I don't know why I couldn't put a number on it. I mean,
I did some digging around. I can't get a number on it either. Okay, but that's a problem, by the way, that you can't get a number on it.
Because that's what the Fed, not to interrupt what I did anyway. Those are the kind of things that our Fed is supposed to be able to see. That we can't see that they're supposed to be, in my opinion, watching out for.
Well, it's okay. So the game that blew up the world back in the 2007-08 time frame was all the levered bets that were placed in various structured products. Okay, which by themselves have leverage in them, obviously. All right, and then on top of that, you place levered market bets with those. All right, well, problem with the basis trade is, basic economics tells us that the more of something you have demand for, the higher the price, all other things being equal, right?
Right.
And when it comes to bonds, yield is the inverse of price, essentially. Right?
Well, you have three things. You have the stream of payments, you have the interest rate, and you've got the price.
Right. But if you've got a basket of bonds with a known maturity, they've already been issued, and they're trading in the secondary market, if the price goes up, the implied yield goes down.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, this is, right. I mean, this was one of the things that made buying long bonds, when the Carter thing was going on, maybe the trade of a lifetime, because you could sit and just eat the coupons forever, and they were nice and cheap. Okay, so you know that inversion of the curve that we've had for a very unreasonable length of time?
It's been a real long time.
Yeah, like never happened before.
Well, if the Fed has shoved the short-term rates up, and for some reason either have kept the long-term rates down, or people keep thinking this inflation is going to go down to zero again, where I don't get it. So somehow or another, the 10-year has stayed under the 3-month now for, 3 years, 2 years?
Well, it's a full percent.
Right, it was more.
In the IOX TNX. Yeah, you trade this morning, you're trading, 4.968 in the IOX. So, but the part of, as I have pointed out for a very long time, the Fed doesn't actually set rates. The Fed jawbones. They talk about what they want to see, what they think is the right thing. But in truth, you've got a Fed at 5.25 by 5.5 right now, and you got the IRX trading 4.968. Well, guess what? I mean, that's the 13-week bill. So, excuse me, but Jerome Powell has not set anything. When he takes rates down by 25 basis points in September this month, he has not set rates at 25 basis points lower. The market has already cut the rates to 4.968.
Well, okay. But Jerome Powell is the guy who has allowed the money supply to increase by $400 billion in the last 4 months, which raises
I'm not saying he, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's not the one who's moving the money supply around, or probably better put, allowing it to be moved without doing something to soak it up, which he could do. Okay. You know, they do have that desk at the New York Fed, right, that can engage in various operations to influence this in a substantial way. But in terms of him making point-level changes in monthly meetings, if you graph, you go over to Fred, and you graph the actual Fed funds rate as announced by the Federal Reserve, and you graph the 13-week bill, you will see that the 13-week bill, in essentially every case, moves first. Okay, and in this case, it has moved first by 2 to 3 months. So, I mean, the idea that he's actually pulling this string is a bunch of garbage.
Well, he's already pulled it.
Well, yeah, but he didn't do it by coming out and announcing a change in the Fed funds rate.
Right. There's a okay. There might be a difference in timing between the verbiage and the action.
Yeah, but here's, I guess here is my point. Every time that you see people pile into this kind of levered garbage, this kind of and this is one of the places that the Fed is supposed to stomp on, okay, because the Fed does have control, effective control, as does the SEC, as do other parts of our government, in regards to the amount of leverage that can be taken through these kinds of repo operations and rollovers and the stuff like this, okay, that the internal machinery within the financial system that allows people to do these kinds of things. Every time you have a group of people that glom onto something like this and start doing it in size, very bad things end up happening. Because the only way, when you start doing uneconomic stuff like this, when you create positive feedback loops, I mean, this is there, it's I've gotten into it with people about the whole, you know, the whole environmental, the so-called climate change and also the nonsense. And I have pointed out repeatedly that the only reason there is actually life on this planet is because nature is full of negative feedback loops. And in fact, the reason you're alive is because those exist. Positive feedback, if there was a positive feedback coefficient within climate and the atmosphere of this planet and its living conditions, we wouldn't be here. Because sometime in the last several million years, that positive coefficient would have taken hold, and that would have been the end of that. It didn't happen, therefore it doesn't exist, period. And that is not arguable, okay? Same reason that if you're playing around with nuclear energy and you happen to get to over unity on your reactivity rate, you don't get the opportunity to try to fix that. It instantaneously goes kaboom, all right? So the same thing is true here, and yet we allow these positive feedback coefficient situations to assert themselves within our financial system. We don't stomp on them. And every single time we let this happen, there's a disaster. And there's going to be another one with this. And this one's in a bad place, because if you have this kind of a thing happen in the bond market, oh boy. Okay, I mean, you only thought the problems we had in 08 were bad.
But they're the ones that have, this is the whole feedback and why it's Stocks and Jacks. You don't, the same people that screwed up the baseball team is probably not the guy who's going to fix it. This, well, you know, these guys have, they talk about, and if the guy says it one more time, was Elvis that used to shoot the TV when he didn't like what was on there? I don't think I want to turn into that, but
plus yeah, I don't, it pretty much was. He had a history of doing that kind of thing. Yes.
He didn't like Robert Goulet, so whenever he was on, he shot him. Why didn't he like Robert Goulet? Was he messing with some lady that Elvis liked or what? I don't know.
I don't know, but you know, he stimulated the economy pretty regularly doing this.
Yeah, well, that's... But, you know, when this starts, stuff starts to happen, I mean, you ask yourself, I mean, somewhere long after we're gone, somebody is going to go back, some economic student in the year 2150 is going to say, how the hell did these guys have an inflation rate of 10, 11, 12%, and your long-term rates never went above 2 for a long time? And people are going to say, wait a minute, because the simplest equation on earth, which we haven't seen work in how many years now, is that your interest rates are equal to the real rate of interest, which is how much you actually pay somebody to use what they have and you don't have. Right. In other words, if I want to build a building, I need steel, I need concrete, I need lights, I need elevators, and oh, by the way, I need the money to build the damn place. And I don't have it, Carl's got it, so I'm going to say to Carl, I need to use your money. By the way, in the bank, you're going to get 3%, which we couldn't get that for a while. I'm going to give you 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever, however you think the building's a layup, whether it's going to be rented, all those other kinds of things. And so that's a factor of production, which is totally by the boards now because of the way you've kept the rates. But when interest rates were that, it should be the real rate of interest plus if the government is acting in a way where the dollar or whatever it is, the wampum is going to be worth 2% less at the end of the year. I also got to cover that for Carl. So right. I need to give him the real rate of interest, which maybe is usually 3%, 2.75, 3, 2.5. It's been a constant through the ages, not our age, but every other age. And plus I need to give him the 2% it's going to degrade, so I need to give him 5. This is simple, stupid math that's been around for, you know, centuries, except now. Right. With our Fed saying... They're going to say, well, you know what? We don't want these rates to go up because we want people to be able to borrow money down here. Certain people, not everybody. Oh, definitely not everybody.
That's why why your credit card interest is, you know, 27%.
Yeah, right. So what we're going to do is anytime somebody like Kyle or the chief or any one of their clients says, wow, these long-term rates are a little low, I'm going to sell these bonds. The next day, the Fed's going to come out and buy them at the ridiculously cheap price and blow their balance sheet up from $4 to $10 trillion in the space of about 2 weeks, and so they're gonna shove it right where the sun don't shine if you even attempt to make that trade. Well, nobody's ever done that before. But you know what are the long term implications of that? You know, I think there's a lot of people sitting on banks with these bonds that are worth nothing. I can't imagine what the stuff at the Euro group bought with negative interest rates and other. They're 2.5%. That stuff's got to be trading what? Half of what they paid for it?
This is a serious problem. This is a really serious problem. And so the thing that I find astounding about this is that we have all these people whistling around, acting like there's no consequence to this. It's never going to happen. The bad thing is never going to come. Okay. It's like living in Florida. You know, I lived there for 20 years. You live with, you know, you move there from, you know, somewhere else, and after 3 or 4 years, there's been no hurricanes. So you say, well, there's never going to be a hurricane. Well, I don't need to worry about insurance. I don't need to have, you know, boards in order to put up on the glass and, you know, board up my windows. And I don't need any sandbags because, you know, the water shall never rise. Oh, really? Okay, and then of course, you know, you wake up one morning and say, "Oh, by the way, here it comes." So, this is the kind of craziness. And the thing is, when I look at the depth of this, you know, I can't find a reason other than something like this basis trade, which is the only reasonable explanation why we've it's been going on 2 years now.
Okay, we've been talking about it for a while. The basis rate is borrowing money in another country and bringing it over here.
It's also the it's you, what you're essentially doing is you're arbitraging the rate difference, the basis points between the long and short end of the curve.
But it's also very obvious if you're overseas what you're doing, because if you went to, well, I guess as Russell pointed out last week, any dollar deposit in a foreign bank is called a euro dollar, even if it's not euro. So
right.
If you went over to Japan and you said, okay, what's the interest rate on the dollar, the U.S. dollar in a Japan bank, they may say, well, gee, that's 3% or 2% or 4% or 5% to borrow it out of them, or maybe more. By the way, what's the rate on the yen? Well, the yen's a lot less. Okay. Give me the yen, convert it to dollars, I'll buy some stuff in the U.S. and hope the rate's the same 2 or 3 years from now when I bring it back. Well, that's an interesting trade, but it's also one without you're legging the trade. Because if you turn around and said, okay, I'll sell that back to you 5 years from now, the forward price is going to include the difference in the interest. Correct?
Right, yeah. The thing that gets me with this is that when you look at this, the difference just in gross terms, okay, between, you know, for example, the IRX and the TNX, okay, so, you know, between a 13-week bill and a 10-year, there's not enough juice in there without leverage to make it worth doing.
Without a doubt.
All right, so that's where the risk comes from. It's not, you know, arbitrage, there's, a long time ago, I did some contract work for a financial outfit that was doing this sort of attempting to exploit mispricing in the currency markets across national.
But it's not mispriced if you complete the trade.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
But the idea was that they could get in front of the FX markets because they were faster than the guys that were doing it on the floor. And this was back when there was a floor.
Yep.
Okay. So they could be quicker.
But the guys on the floor pretty much traded the rate. They didn't actually trade the stuff.
But that was the idea, okay?
Yeah.
And essentially it was picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. But if you're fast enough, then, you can do this for quite a period of time. Now, of course, there's always the possibility you're going to get spanked. And so... that kind of tempers your, how far out in front of things you get and how far you exploit this. But, it's like the old con that somebody figured out when computers first came in is that if I'm paying you compounded interest and I skim off a fraction of a penny, you're not going to sit there with a calculator and figure out that you got screwed out of that half cent. All right. So that works right up until somebody figures it out, then you go to jail for it. But this isn't illegal. This is just stupid in that when you look at this fundamentally without the leverage, there's no money in it.
Well, that's the whole point of when I've said God knows how many times, and I think a lot of listeners don't really kind of understand what don't get what I'm talking about, because it's not all that obvious sometimes when I say what I'm talking about. I listen to myself and I go, wait a minute, what the hell did I do? Back in the 2008 crisis, the mortgage rates were 6.5%. So there was an incredible, there were $35 of leverage on every dollar of mortgages.
Right.
To the point where the classic one that blew up in Europe, one of them, was it Morgan? Or I think it was a Morgan Stanley one. There were no mortgages in it. There were synthetic mortgages.
Right, it was all synthetic.
Because
right.
the demand for these things was greater than there actually was a supply of mortgages, like to the tune of 20 or 30 times. So you sit there and say, self, why? Plus the rates are 6.5%. So you sit
how
there
in the
say,
blank did somebody manage to pull that one off?
Well, even before that thought, if the mortgage rates were 12 or 14, which they were in 80, you and I might have, snuck in and sold Mama's sterling silver for a chance to get, we probably wouldn't have, but we would have found every dollar we could to buy stuff long term at 12%.
Oh,
because
yeah.
For God's sake, it's probably trading for 60 cents on a buck, which it was in those days. But I'm sitting there going, why is there such craze to get stuff at 6 or 6.5? It's not that great a return. It's just okay. Right? But if we can borrow somewhere else at 2, I'll say this slow. If Carl and I pony up, and we get a bunch of investors, and we got, say, $2 million, and we go to a bank in Japan, and if we put the $2 million into 6 or 6.5, that's what's that, $120,000 a year? You know, big deal it's okay, but it's not the best anybody can do with $2 million, I would hope. So if we go to Japan and say, oh, wait a minute, with our $2 million, you bozos are going to lend me $100 million at 2%, and I can put the $100 million to work at 6. Whoa! Now we're talking $100 million times 4% is going to be what? $40 million? No, $400 million. $40 million, sorry. $40 million. Now that's different, right? Not 40 million, it's 4 million. Sorry. But still, now we're making 4 million on our 2 million. Whoa, that's not bad.
Yeah, as long as nothing goes wrong and you're in the whole 10.
Yeah.
Right. But see, that's the problem. Is that so now, here's the issue that you get to, though, with something like this. When this starts to get into places like where it apparently is now in the Treasury market, right, you know, one of the obvious questions, you look at the bill and bond issuance over the last couple of years. You know, this of course is Yellen's legacy, right? Because
yeah.
She's the one who's been doing this, and you look at this, you go, what sort of nut job issues bills into an environment where the long bond is cheaper in terms of rate?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes no sense. But are you kind of a...
Well, but that's what she's done,
yeah.
Okay? I mean, if you look at the bill and bond issuance, there's essentially no 10- and 30-year bonds out there that are being issued right now.
They didn't do any 30s for a while.
Well, I know, but I'm saying they're all been crammed in the short end, which, by the way, when there's no supply and you've got people doing this for a basis trade, what does that do to price? Obviously drives the price up, right? Because, you know, supply and demand. Well, that in turn suppresses the yield.
Well, that's right. And when I was a real quick story on how different it can be. Years and years ago, Carl, years before I was, before long before I was doing a show, Nancy Drew Sheehan, how's that for a name, ran for state treasurer in Illinois. So my buddies call me up and they go, hey, we're putting together a committee to back Nancy and blah, blah, blah. And we got a little, and talk about this. Imagine this in today's world. You know what we actually did, Carl? We spent 2-3 months meeting every couple of weeks. You know, we had a nice serious meeting. And of course, we're out for serious burgers and beers afterward. So that was fine. But everybody wrote a piece of what her essentially platform was going to be. And I wrote the financial piece, which was pretty easy to do because in the state laws usually, I mean, pretty much across the country, the only thing you could invest in the state was in U.S. treasuries. So if you're the treasurer of Iowa and I'm the treasurer of Illinois, you and I had a bet on a high-end martini every year. One year you're going to say you're going to lean into the 2 years and the 3 years and the 6 months, and I'm going to maybe do the near term and maybe a little longer term, and you're going to beat me by, you know, half a percentage, maybe half, you know, instead of I'll get 3.1, you're going to get 3.15.
Right.
You know, the next year you're going to get 3.1 and I'm going to get, you know, 3.2 or something. So, I mean, there was nothing really to, other than us fighting over a martini, there was no real, and then all of a sudden I look at the entire country and there's two idiots, well, turned out to be idiots, Harris County, Texas, and Orange County, California, everybody else is doing 3, 3.1, 6.5, 6.7. And I'm going, wait a minute. what are these guys doing differently? And these are the guys that had all this leverage, and the Merrill Lynch was in Orange County, and they're making all this dough. All of a sudden, one day, it blows up. And, of course, both guys, they know nothing. They see nothing. They were talked into it by Merrill Lynch. They had no idea the risk. And I think Merrill Lynch ended up paying some of the stuff because, of course, the public was all over them. It wasn't their stupid elected official that was crowing about how he was doing double everybody else. It was Merrill Lynch's problem because they showed him the products and they essentially bought them. Now, who the hell was really at fault? I don't know. But the fact is, there was such an outlier that you sit there and go, wait a minute. But
something funny's going on here, right?
But now, in the beginning of our conversation, we said, okay, what is the Fed? I mean, you and I are I'm going to say we're on this stuff a little more than most, but we're clearly not on it as much as somebody who does currency trading every day or somebody's in the currency markets and over the counter or whatever. I mean, that's their guy's livelihood. I mean, that's like them saying they're as good as me at options. They're not. You know, it's my livelihood. And now you and I might say, gee, how could all this happen in 2007, 2008, or maybe now? And the only people that know every single penny that flies from, literally flies, from Japan to here, or because these guys settle this stuff every morning. And they can see a trend of, wait a minute, why all of a sudden are all these people converting yen into dollars? You and I have no, I guess, you know, you're the hund. If you went through every single Fed document, you might catch it. But the Fed is supposed to be watching for it, in my opinion. That's why we see a government that every single time the regulations come down, and that's why they're so aggravating in my industry, they're designed to harass people over the last fiasco instead of anticipating the new fiasco. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
I mean, they're gonna harass us over, you know, Interpol and somebody, Bernie Madoff. Bernie Madoff's dead. You know, enough with that. I mean, nobody's gonna do that anymore. Let's figure out what the next fiasco is instead of aggravating people over stuff that's long gone. Now, in my opinion, I mean, that's what we're supposedly paying these people for, and I don't think it's what we're getting. Do you? Maybe because they're getting right where some people are really happy with this whole.
Well, I was going to say somebody's making money off this, but I look at where this is because it's. That there's craziness in markets is a given. There's always going to be craziness in markets. Okay, I mean, this whole AI thing, this is going to blow up in everybody's face. Everybody who thinks NVIDIA has the world by the short and curlies, no, they don't. And in 99% of the people who are using this stuff and paying for it, they're paying, you know, assuming that they're not vendor financing the acquisition, which makes it even worse. 99% of the organizations that are using this stuff right now are not making revenue with it. If they are getting any revenue, they're not getting anywhere near enough to cover the cost. I mean, Tesla just turned on this huge AI farm, if you will. It just, you know, just started, began the startup process for this thing. They've been building it for the last year or two. I don't know what Elon thinks he's going to do with this. You know, everyone says this is the training for his so-called full self-driving, which today is not, even though that's how he's managed to get away with marketing is that I have no idea. But here's the problem. He spent all of these billions of dollars to buy this stuff, put it in place, pay for the power and the cooling to operate it, which is even more obscene. And yet there's zero revenue coming in from it right now. Zero. All right, now that is an enormous levered bet for his company to make that the revenue will come and it will be enough not only to pay for the equipment and the operating cost, but it will be enough to cover it before the next generation of chips comes out that is 50% faster, uses half the electricity, and therefore half the air conditioning requirement. And the guy who buys that version destroys him.
Well, right. We're gonna have to take a dash with hold that one up, but there doesn't appear to be any market repercussions for any of this stuff. Look, all the people invested in China 5 years ago, China is all
not
you heard.
Not today, but no. You know what? If this comes apart in the treasury market, the repercussions are going to be everywhere at once.
Well, the cloud stuff. You're right. You're right. But the cloud stuff never. People who talk cloud all day long and drove their prices up. I mean, I don't see any kind of. It seems to be all salved over by extra money from the Fed, but maybe
up until a point, yes, it is. But see, the problem with that, Chief, is if you never pay the price of doing these kinds of silly things.
I get it. I'm with you. I'm just pointing out that it hasn't happened yet, which is true. I mean,
you're right. It has not yet.
Yet, operative word there. Ricky, whenever Joel piles in, we'll go to him.
Okay, sounds good.
Whenever you hear him.
He's not in the meeting yet.
Right, whenever he's
there. There he is.
If he's there, well then, Carl, I think Kenny's coming on, but if he doesn't, we'll be back at you. SP Futures up down 26, NASDAQ Futures down 118. Want to go right to Joel?
Sure.
Let's go right to Joel. I just gave the numbers here. Gold's down, silver's down a little bit, gold's about flat. We'll give the numbers in a little bit. Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay, Chief. Good morning to you on this Tuesday. How was your 3-day weekend?
You know what? It was fun. My went down to Indiana for a day. Uh-huh. We had a nice time down there, and went to we went to the town of Valpo for lunch. I don't know why we did that, but we did. It's a great little town. All these little bars and restaurants, and it's really amazing how even in smaller towns, how the places where people are going to eat, it's. You know, I'm not saying it's a 1%er thing, because I'm sure as hell not a 1%er, but it's a $16 hamburger in Valpo. I mean, it's not like it's 5 or 8 or something. I mean, I don't know that the regular Valpo resident goes out for, you know, hamburgers for 4 on a Saturday afternoon, maybe. I did see
I was in a little bit north of you on Saturday. I was in Milwaukee.
There you go.
Nice town.
Oh, yeah, Milwaukee, real nice town.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a long time.
Especially if you like beer, it's a real nice town.
I was in there for a wedding, and just nice airport, nice downtown, at least what I saw. Spent some time on the lake, and it was fun. Oh, yeah. I'd give it it was a nice city, nice clean city.
They have nice fests along the Ripple. They got Summerfest, they got Irish Fest, they got Polish Fest. There's a lot of stuff to do there. It's a great place.
All right.
So what do you make? Are you the? How much is Florida State paying his coach? You know, he's 0-2.
Oh boy. An 0-2 start. I mean, after the brouhaha, right, last year about not getting in the playoffs. I mean, you know, just like parity. You know, just like what they're trying to achieve in professional football. The same thing in college football. So, yeah, two upsets. A lot of people don't realize, too, that over the weekend, I don't know what their overall record was, but in four, pretty marquee games, the SEC was 1-3.
Really?
Texas, woo! Yeah. Oh, man.
I didn't watch that game. What happened to them? Did they lose or win?
Who?
Texas.
Texas, well, they blew out. It was Colorado State. They're coming into the big house on Saturday, and big game. And I can honestly say that I am not optimistic. You guys know me about being optimistic and not optimistic. More times than not, I'm always tooting the horn of the Wolverines, but. We lack a good quarterback. The quarterback play, it's either one of two things. It's either, hey, we're not showing nothing against Fresno State. We have the toughest schedule in the world. We got to play it close to the belt. We're not going to show anything. Or we did absolutely nothing to replace J.J. McCarthy. I'm worried. And the biggest thing, I mean, I know our defense is good. Will Johnson, 87-yard pick six. But, man, just take a look at the four wide receivers that Texas has. And they just looks like they're all 6'2", like 190, and they run at 4.240. I'm going. Not super optimistic, but, that's my look at Michigan football. Markets, I don't know, Chief. Just that you when you hit a major area of resistance – and you just can't go through 5-6 different times. Just, I don't know, feeling a little bit.
Yeah, we keep running into the same spot, and we keep having a problem.
Yeah. I mean, it's like someone, you know the big boys on Wall Street. They're like, we're not moving. We're not moving, no matter what. We don't care. And that's what you got at the 56-70 level. I'm looking at my chart here, and I would say at least 8-9 times in the last 10-12 sessions, you've hit that area. So resistance is easier to define support. You got the jobs number on Friday. I think one thing that people are not paying enough attention to, people have very short memories, including myself. All the brouhaha last week. NVIDIA! NVIDIA earnings! It's, you know, going to be the turn in the market. Well, NVIDIA's down. NVIDIA did not get that blast off of, which was a pretty good earnings report. I guess they're not going to grow at that same rate. So the mega cap tech has not responded. Apple's close to its all-time high, and so is Meta. But if you look at Microsoft, Google, Amazon, some of these other stocks, they're not telling you this is like just a rip-roaring, ready to go to 5,700 market.
Well, not only that, it's to me the valuations, the earnings have not, they've been pretty darn good, I think. Well, you know, who the hell are these expectators? I don't know about that, but they've been pretty good. Yet what is Microsoft? I've got them at 13 times revenue. The revenue has to go up by like 30 or 40% to make the stock move up from here. And I don't, how the hell does Microsoft's revenue go up 30 or 40%? I mean, I love all these companies. I just think they're too high in a lot of ways. I mean, I love your tie, but not $500 worth. I mean, $100, I'd like your tie, but not five. You know, we're kind of reached that stage where what does the news have to be to drive, you know, Microsoft to double? I mean,
I have no idea. I mean, AI, chief, yeah. AI. And if you're waiting for that train to come, then, you know, you better pack some snacks at the train station, because that's going to be a while.
Well, one of the nice things that happens when I get on the, we have friends in Portage, or Ogden Dunes, which is right next to Portage. And then I always, you know, of course, me, Joe, you can imagine, 6:30 in the morning, I'm down at the local stores. And there's a great car wash there. I like to go to. The girls do a great job inside your car. They do everything. So whenever I can, I go there. And I do my stuff for the local stuff, but I'm a pretty observant dude. And I see somebody buying lottery tickets on their credit card. So I observe that, and I'm going, maybe it's just one of these people that doesn't carry cash no matter what. Or they're buying hope on their credit card. You know, I hope it's the former and not the latter, right? Then you see people in some of the, I went to two stores, and what's the other one's not as, maybe as affluent as the Meyer store. And you see people basically adding up everything that's going in their basket. And you see people that don't look very healthy. The clothes don't look very new. The cars in the lot look pretty darn old. There's an underside of every one of these areas that is just seemingly getting worse and worse. And I won't say nobody cares, but nobody really wants to look too hard. Is that a fair statement?
Chief, I'll just say there's a lot to be worried about.
Yeah. I think for all of us, and I know this is from, this maybe is in a more mature dude's approach to things, is for us to move forward, a real high percentage of the us needs to move forward. And now, in this world, people don't necessarily think that happened. You know, one person buying a mega yacht's the same as 1,000 people buying a bass boat. I don't think you and I think that way. But some people, I think, do. Hey, the numbers are the same. What's the difference? The mega yacht costs as much as all the bass boats, but it's kind of not the same, do you think?
Oh, boy. I'll agree with you. But, yeah, there's a lot of things going on. And, you know, a lot of geopolitical stuff, which is very disturbing, which is not good for the markets.
Right.
And the geopolitical stuff has created a very divisive United States. Things just keep going in the wrong direction. It's like we're adding the losers. We're adding to a losing position. And we don't even know what the winning position is right now. So, you know me, I'm cautious. I'm always cautious. I'm cautious on the markets, cautious on in life. So I just think people should just, you know, be focused on, you know, the things that are important to them. Of course, money in the markets are important too. I think this is just I look at this, you know, rebound in the market off the yen carry low, and I'd love to see us bust out, you know, to new all-time highs. Just rally, and there's always, you know, that's what the market's done. I just think there's a lot of risk in the market. not only from the stocks trading at higher valuations, but the internal, you know, environment in the United States, and also the geopolitical environment.
Did you, one thing, real quick, just on a sports note. I watched the Irish play A&M on Saturday night, essentially cover to cover, by myself.
Okay.
Which, I'm going to say by myself. Because the people I were with, they had a big, you know, they're partying out in the backyard, and they didn't want to watch the game, and they didn't really need me to party, that type of thing. I will say this, Joel, never again will I watch one of those games from stem to stern without somebody like you sitting next to me to BS with. It's 11 minutes in a 3-hour and 50-minute commercial time minefield. These guys didn't have a pause button because they took it. They didn't have cable. They took it off some, I don't know where they got it from, but Fubo or Himbo or where those places. So there was no pause button somehow. So I had to actually watch the whole thing. Yo, I've had it. I can't do it. What's with the 2-minute warning that they put in college this year? What is that all about? And then it gives you another 5 commercials? They needed that, like they needed another behind. What about?
I tell you, Chief, I know my dad passed in 2010, so you never got an opportunity to meet him. I didn't even know you back then. But in the 70s, in their late 70s, early 80s, he was adamant that TV was going to ruin college football. That they would just dictate that Michigan used to always have noon start, you know, get the people in and out. Then the 3:30 start. He wasn't around before the first night game. Quick story. I know I told this one probably before, but this must have been 1979, and we were playing Ohio State. And you know, remember when they used to film the TV guys would be on a cart that would move up and down the sidelines?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There was a goal line stand. Michigan was trying to hold Ohio State. And that cart pulled up right in front of us. We were on like the 10-yard line, you know, pretty high up, but still. And my dad, we had to hold him back from going and knocking that guy off his seat. So he can see the game. Yeah. And it's just gotten worse and worse. So, you know, I still got my tickets. I missed this game. I'm missing some other games because of travel. But, you know, when you can have, like you say, 2 minutes of football and 11 minutes, I mean, it ain't going to get any better. So that's my rant. Next Tuesday, I'm going to be in a better mood. Okay, Chief?
Nope, no problem, buddy. S&P futures down 29. S&P futures down 135. I'm going to watch that one for sure with somebody.
Yeah, give the 7, Chief. I never go against my Michigan, but if I had to bet, which I don't, I'd say give the points. Go.
What's is it night or day game?
It's a nooner.
Really?
A nooner. Thank God, I'll be able to get to bed early. All right,
take
one.
Care. Do we have Kenny?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
All right, you sound great. How are things in Florida? Are you in Boston?
No, I'm actually going to Boston right after I got off the phone with you. But things in Florida are good. It's rainy right now, kind of a little bit muggy. But, you know, we are in September, really entering the final season of the final part of the hurricane season. So, you know, it's fairly typical, but it's okay, you know.
So, you know, if you trundle your behind up here, it's, I don't know about today, but this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, yesterday was about as gorgeous a day. I'm going to say 75, no humidity, not a cloud. It was about as good as it gets.
Yeah, but I was watching a long-range weather forecast. They're already talking about frost advisories coming in and the central part of the country coming sweeping right down through Chicago.
Yeah, this weekend's supposed to be high as 60 or something.
Yeah. I know, I'm going to Boston this morning. It's 54 degrees there right now. It'll be 70 midday, but, you know, 54 degrees for me will feel a little bit chilly.
Well, yesterday morning I got up early in Orland, and let's say this way, if I would have been smart enough to bring a sweatshirt, I would have worn it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. I wasn't, so I couldn't. So there you go. So what's going on? We've got market stuff. We've got worldwide news. We've got all kinds of stuff. Carl was talking earlier about this carry trade being even bigger than people. It's not over yet. I've been reading some articles about that. You know, how do you get, Kenny, the people on the New York floor, and I'm going to say those guys had a bigger window into some of the stuff than I ever did because they're closer.
Yeah.
Who other than the Fed themselves probably some of the banks because they're actually doing the transactions. Who is like privy to the numbers of how many people are not that if you gave you and me a number we could trade off it, but over a period of time we'd at least maybe have some concern or not. Over a period of time, how many people are privy to, God, 50 swinging idiots just borrowed, you know, $50 billion in Japan and bought stuff over here and they didn't do the other side of the trade? I mean, somebody must have a clue of these currency transactions every day because the Fed does them, right?
Well, I'd have to believe that people at the Fed must be aware of that. Certainly the hedge fund community, I think, is very aware of that because it's a crowded trade, right? And for a while there, it was a very profitable trade, and so they're all talking to each other, and so they're all aware of it. But, you know, Joe Q Public is not necessarily aware of it. And I put it in my note this morning about how people get dragged down in that Japanese carry trade that people didn't, you know, most investors had no idea even what that was and how they got involved and, you know, why were they suffering as a result. And so it's very interesting. But to your point, I don't know. But there's going to, I would imagine, a fair amount of people that are aware of kind of the extent of it, right? I mean, it has to be at the Fed.
Yeah, I mean, they would be the people that, you know, they get the reports, the guys that, well, before COVID, you know, over in the bar that I've met you a couple of times, all the Fed people come in there. So I'd end up sitting at their table, become buddies. Well, of course, after COVID, the Fed is kind of not back to work, Kenny. The whole place is working from home.
Yeah, a lot of places are still working from home, which, you know, which is a little bit confusing to me. I don't get that at all. But
well, if it's places that own their own place, they can do what they want. But if you and I are paying them, I'm not so sure we like them all from home. But
no, but the government's all working from home too, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't think half the government's gone back to work.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They stamped their feet and said, no, we don't want to commute. We don't want to do this. And so they don't do it.
Well, that's I don't get that. But
yeah, neither do I.
Well, the places, how can I say this? I'm not going to accuse anybody because all these guys are my friends of being overpaid. Well, let's put it this way. The places that somehow have the nationality says, what I said, like Bernie Madoff, Bernie's got an angle. If you got an angle, like if you're an exchange, for instance, and you don't really do much except charge people, well, that's unfair, but charge people for quotes, for instance, because you were given a monopoly by the government. And you got all this money piling in, and you sit around and say, what do these people do all day? A lot of them aren't even there. They're home. Well,
that's right.
But, you're not going to have your grocery workers or your construction workers working from home. It's a pretty tough way to build a bridge if everybody's home, right?
Yeah, right. Can't do that.
Can't do that.
Right? Grocery work, you can't do that.
No, it's... So, I mean, it's... I guess it's not an indictment. You just... When you see who's doing it, you see exchanges, governments, those kinds of places, or maybe somebody with a monopoly, maybe Commonwealth Edison people are working from home, too. Well, guess what? How are they going to lose money? They're not, you know, type of thing.
Right.
But is there... I mean, Carl's always talking about one of these days, this stuff, you know, the yield curve that's kind of been out of control for a while in terms of the downward sloping and those kinds of things. You can never put a day in when it's a problem, can you? Sometimes it's not a problem, but sometimes it is a problem. How can you tell whether it is or it isn't?
I think it depends on which day we're talking about, right? Because to your point, some days it is, some days it isn't. So if the news cycle tends to be negative, and suddenly there's negative eco data and negative everything, then suddenly it becomes a negative story. If everything's positive and eco data is good and it looks like we're coming in for a soft landing and the Fed's got it all under control, nobody seems to view it as a negative. They just view it as, okay, it's just part of the process. It's all good. No one's worried about it. So I think it really depends on the tone of the day and the significance of the eco data, right? And Friday might be... This is a big week, even though it's a shortened week. It is a big week for data, but certainly Friday's non-farm payroll number is going to be kind of what people are focused on, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how they interpret it. Is it negative? Is it more negative? Is it okay? Is it, you know, they're expecting, I think, 165,000 jobs, you know, which is certainly well below where it's been, but that supports the narrative of why the Fed needs to cut. So, it's going to be interesting to see at what where that number comes in and then how the narrative changes, because if it comes in really weak, then they're going to be screaming for 50 basis points. If it comes in right where they kind of expect it, then 25 is going to be what the narrative is. So I think to your point, it depends on the data that day, that week, what they're talking about is how it affects the psyche.
Okay, have you ever seen, and you know, when I say ever, you and I have been around a long time, so it's hard to remember. like every quarter going back 35, 40 years. It's, I tell you, that quarter wasn't good. But the, have you ever seen when these guys talking about this rate? God, what would they do on TV all day if they didn't talk about this rate? It's all right. They talk about. But the, to me, I've never seen anything. The money supply 5 months ago started to go up, and we've gone from 5.5 to essentially 5, maybe 5.1. We're going to the auction today for a lot of people. I don't know if we're even going to get 5.1. So the point being, they have already acted. That's what they do. They pull money in or out of the pool so that this rate moves in one direction or the other. They've been doing it since friggin' April, and they still won't announce what they've done. What is the lag time? I mean, the rate's 5.1. Their announced rate is 5.5. Match them up, you idiots. What are you waiting for?
Right, but you see, I don't think the majority of Joe Q public wants to know, needs to know, understands it, it's not really important to Joe Q public. Not to people like you and me and maybe economists and analysts, it should be more transparent. But I think the less they say, then the better off they are, right?
But I mean, you and I can't, if we walk into a car dealer and the guy goes, we're thinking about raising prices, and you go, you already crossed out the old price and it's already on there, the new price. Oh, yeah, no, we're just thinking about announcing that.
Right.
I mean, it seems very obvious that the actions are leading the words to an amazing extent here.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. And I think, look, but we've been talking about that. So the expectation is that was going to happen anyway. And now it's just happening, right? So now it's fulfilling kind of that promise. But, to your point, why don't you just do it instead of telling everyone you're thinking about it and then marking the price up or marking it down and then waiting. Just do it
why is the vernacular, I guess I'm always talking about, since this is what we do, Kenny, you and I are well, you more than me because you're on TV and so forth, but the way it's talked about by the talking heads is, you know, the market is anticipating. It's not the market. Kenny Polcari and the chief running some massive hedge funds, which neither one of us do, moving the market around because we're anticipating what the Fed's going to do. The Fed's the one that's moving it around. Just tell us. The vernacular is somehow you and I are big enough to anticipate what the Fed's doing. We're moving it. We're not moving it. They're moving it.
Right. That's right. They are moving it, and so they should just say it, right?
Yeah,
instead, just do it. That's what I mean. Just do it.
I don't understand why this seems to be somewhat of a new phenomenon, though, isn't it, or is it?
I don't necessarily think it's so new. I think it's been happening for a while. I don't think it's so new. It certainly, this never happened, you know, when you and I were much younger in the 80s, the mid-80s into the 90s, none of this stuff happened. But I think most of it started happening, you know, after the crisis. Suddenly they got more transparent. Suddenly they wanted to tell everyone every single move they were going to make, when they were going to make it, when they were thinking about making it. Maybe it's going to happen, and then maybe it isn't, but maybe it is. And I think that's where it got really... really out of control. And I think that's actually part of the problem now, is that they spend too much time kind of speculating on, is it, isn't it? What's it going to be? What's the Fed going to say? What's the Fed going to say? How many Fed heads going to come out and contradict each other? I think all that stuff is very chaotic and confusing to the market, because remember, that never used to happen in the 80s. Fed heads didn't come out and speak and give their opinions and all that stuff. And so it was much more controlled, in my opinion.
Well, it also, I mean, I don't think you and I ever dreamed that if the day they said we're going to go from 6 to 6.5 was the day they started pulling money out of the system. There's always
a little bit of
rounding of the edges but this is. And have you become as cynical of the world as I am? In a minute, the more somebody uses the word transparency, the more I'm convinced he's lying.
1,000%. 1,000%.
Did you ever?
No, none of them are ever telling the truth. None of them.
Did you ever read? I don't know how some guy. Remember when guys would go before Congress and before like every other word they'd say, well, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't do that much anymore. Some old congressman still might, but and there's some dude. I don't know how he did it. I mean, how do you even think about something like this? The guy writes up this allegedly big study about what percentage of the time whatever the person says after, quite frankly, is a flat-out lie. It was like right. 40 or 50. It was some huge number that as soon as they say quite frankly, immediately believe they're dying or they're lying or something. It's that. So what are you going to Bocchieri's Pizza, Bocchieri's Restaurant, everything while you're up there?
No, I got to go up there for on some business, but I'll be back by Thursday. I'm going to be there for a couple of days, and then I'll be back by Thursday.
I used to go to Boston when I was very young, working for Pullman, once every couple of months, working on the railroad car contract. I love the place. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's going home, because I grew up in Boston, right? I grew up in the first 22 years of my life. I grew up just 8 miles outside of, you know, downtown Boston, and it was great. And I just haven't been back a lot since, you know, a lot of my family's now moved to down to the South Shore of Massachusetts or down to Florida. And so I haven't been to Boston proper in a while. So I'm actually looking forward to going.
Well, when you helped out Matty Weber there to find the places, he said he had a great time. He's going from one Pulcari restaurant to another.
Right. Yeah.
Is part of the family still up there owning places, or they just got...
Yeah. The restaurant, the famous restaurant, Pulcari's restaurant, that was right across from what was the Boston Garden at the time, moved out. It's not down. It's not in the North End anymore, but it is still out on Route 3 in Saugus. The big, big neon sign. It says Pulcari's Italian Restaurant. And every time I know someone who goes by it, they take a picture and send it to me. And right down in the North End, there is still the old, it's called Pulcari's Coffee Shop. And it's a, but it's not a coffee shop per se, like where they're like a coffee shop. They're selling coffee beans and the dried beans and the, all that stuff that they're selling in big wooden bins, just like they did, you know, back in the, in, you know, 1930. It's really amazing to go there to see it. Because it really hasn't changed that much.
Well, the old Boston Garden was on top of South Station, right?
Yeah.
I thought the new one was same spot, just a rebuild, isn't that?
The new one, yeah. And I don't even know what the new one's called anymore. Is it called, I don't know if it's called, it's not the Fleet Center anymore. I think it's the TD Center, I think. I don't even know what it is anymore. But it's, yeah, it's in the same place. They just knocked it all down and rebuilt it. And I haven't been, but I haven't
did
been.
They, actually, were they, well, did, they miss, did they miss a year and play somewhere else or what?
Did they what?
Would they had done it? I mean, hockey and basketball plays there, right?
Yeah. They both play there. Yeah.
Well, so how did they? Yep. How did they? Did they play somewhere else for a while?
Honestly, it was so long ago that they did it. I can't remember how they did that when they knocked the old one down and built a new one. Because it happened after I left. I was living in New York when that whole thing went through a renovation. So I actually forget how they played that.
Well, they managed to do. They totally redid Madison Square Garden. Without losing any games,
right. They may not have. I don't actually remember them either losing games or playing somewhere else. But then again, I it was a long time ago, so I'm not sure I completely remember.
Well, those places that are in on top of train stations and stuff, they're spectacular for getting people out of there.
I went
to Madison Square Garden, and there's 20-some thousand people in the place. And 2 minutes after the game's over, I'm like, where is everybody?
Yeah.
But it sits on top of about nine trail and train lines. Everybody goes downstairs and they're gone.
Yeah, they all disappear into the belly of the beast and get on their trains and they're out of there.
Well, you take care of yourself, Kenny. Last question. What, if anything, should a knucklehead like me, should I stop looking at it or whatever? I'm stunned at this in Microsoft, and obviously I think they've been a very good monopolist, if there is such a thing, and basically have kept their nose somewhat out of the way of the departments while people are after other places. But having said that, they've done exceptionally well. Have you ever, what should I make of a company that big, that mature, they're a cash cow being priced at like 13 times revenue? I've never seen a company, well, I'm going to go to some of the other ones, NVIDIA and some of these other places, but let's put it this way, I've never seen a mature company like that.
Right.
NVIDIA, I'd say, is not as mature. They're still growing faster. I've never seen a company that big, priced that way, I don't want to go back to 2000. Cisco and those guys were, but look what happened to them.
Yeah, but in this case, I still think, once again, that we're at the very beginning of this whole AI revolution. I still think it's very much in its infancy, and so therefore, I think there's still a lot of room for places like Microsoft to participate, which is why I think it continues to get priced the way it does, right? Because I think there's huge opportunity ahead for them. Not maybe as much as NVIDIA. That's growing at, you know, multiples of that in terms of its growth. But, you know, I fully support and I fully think that Microsoft is going to continue to benefit.
Well, I just one of those things, Kenny. If you ask me anything about the company, I can't give you anything bad about it.
Right.
I'm just saying, how exactly at their size just but numbers wise, yeah. Do they grow 40 or 50% in revenue? I mean, is anybody else going to be left?
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, I just look at the numbers and I go, it can't happen. It's you know, it reminds me of like 2000 for
right.
the top seven stocks there. Could they all go up 50% in revenue? I'm going, we have to double the size of the country.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Well, we'll see. At some point, it's going to stop. I don't think the music's going to end right now, though. But to your point, at some point, it can't go on like that.
I'd just love to see us somehow really grow into it. And I would love to see that happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, take care of yourself. Have a nice trip, buddy. SP Futures down 30, NASDAQ Futures down 133. Let's do a real quick traffic, weather, sports, and we'll go right to Professor Hill.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. When we got three guests that quick, we wanted those people to talk more than you and me, Ricky, but now we can say something. SP Futures down 31. They've been there pretty much all morning. NASDAQ Futures down 134. Again, they haven't really moved. It's kind of where they've been. Dow's down 208. Dow Futures, individual stocks. Nothing crazy. The one that's doing so not so hot here is Boeing's down 6.25 because they were downgraded by a couple people. Caterpillar down 237. I got McDonald's down $2. Nothing crazy. Except for, like I said, Boeing's the biggest mover there in terms of percentage. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 65.3%, FTSE down 44.5%, CAC around down 18.2%, so not much going on at the CAC around, but the rest of the guys are down a little bit. We're in Asia, got the Nikkei down 14. These guys, I think, were down yesterday, the day we didn't trade. Hang Seng was down a lot yesterday, down, but they're down another 40 today, 0.2%, because they're down to 17,651, which is quite a bit lower than last Friday. Shanghai, another down 8, doesn't sound like much. They were down yesterday a bunch too. They're at 2802, in danger of going under 2800, which we haven't seen in like a really long time. On Friday, which is a while ago, Dow was up 228, S&P up 56, NASDAQ up 197. So we're coming off a 3-day weekend. We're heading the other way, but not near as much as we were up on Friday. Bonds, a 10-year unchanged 3.91, but that's a high number. The Bunds unchanged 2.33, Japan up 2 basis points. 0.923 as they're kind of heading back toward 1% again, which they were, and they went flying back down. Oil down a $1.10, 72.45, again at the real low end of this range. Chinese demand going down is causing problems with oil. Brent down $1.52, 75.20. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.15. RBOB down 4 cents, 2.04. I got gas in Indiana. Rick, you were down in Indiana as well. I got it for 2.35, and I saw one. At, I'm sorry, 335, and I saw one at 317.
That Kevin, sounds beautiful, man.
Kevin claims he got 299 up where he is.
Wow.
He must be in the hills somewhere. I don't know. A gold down $10, 25.17. It was up on Friday. Silver down 58 cents, 28.55. I never give investment advice, but I'll tell you, every single time that thing touches 30, it has been a serious sale. Now somewhere along the line here, it's probably a buy. It'll creep back toward 30, and I haven't done this, so it's not like I'm telling you what we've been doing, but boy, oh boy. Copper down 14 cents. Now, there's a huge move, 407. Again, it's all tied into this Chinese demand number. Foreign exchange, euro's at 110. It's down a little bit, and the British pound's 131. Japan is 146, so not much movement over there. And we got Bitcoin up 666 at 59,123, so still somewhere around that 60,000 number. Yeah, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Boy, Cubs last night.
Chief. Let me tell you about it. But first, the weather. It's currently 7:08 here in beautiful Chicago. 57 degrees right now with a high of 76. Mostly sunny and nice, gorgeous, gorgeous day to be outside. Tonight will be clear with a low of 63 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 108. Hot with plenty of sunshine, dangerous heat. Tonight will be clear as well with a low of 85 degrees. Onto traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we're looking at 29 minutes. We're looking at 52 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 44 minutes Eisenhower from Wolf, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes, and Stevenson from turning 4 to the Dan Ryan, 32 minutes. yesterday, the White Sox. Aye, 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 Chief. White Sox lose to the Orioles 3-13. Diamondbacks lose to the Dodgers 6-11. And the Cubs lose to the Pirates 3-5. All that was yesterday. However, today, Chicago has a chance for redemption. Back-to-back games for the White Sox and the Cubs. White Sox play the Orioles at 5:35. The Cubs play the Pirates at 6:40. And the Diamondbacks play the Giants at 8:45 p.m. Lastly, football season is here. Thursday, September 5th at 7:20 p.m. is going to be pretty much the start of it. Chiefs face the Ravens to start the season. And Sunday, September 8th, we have both the Cardinals and the Bears. Cardinals play the Bills at 12 p.m. and the Bears play the Titans at 12 p.m. as well. Back over to you, Chief.
Hey, take a look and see when the Packers are playing somebody in Brazil. I thought that was Thursday as well, or is that Friday?
You said Brazil?
They're playing in Brazil, yeah.
I'm going to look it up right now. Man, give me one second.
Do we have a professor?
Yeah, we do.
Hey,
how are you, buddy?
Doing really well. We just got back from New York. We drove up in one of those 12-passenger vans from Budget Car Rental Friday early in the a.m. And then our church had a splish splash at, I don't know, something called Splash Mountain on Long Island, the biggest water park in New York State.
Okay.
On the eastern tip of Long Island. I had about an hour's worth of sleep, I think. And the kids were at that all day until like 4. And then we packed up that 12-passenger van. We packed it up with a bunch of stuff from New York City, and then we drove it. We left at 9:30 p.m. Sunday night. We got here yesterday morning at 6:30 in the morning. I drove the entire way. And then my kids and my wife and I had that thing unpacked in an hour.
You run a tight ship, or somebody does. You or your wife runs a tight ship out there.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it makes a dad proud when his 10-year-old triplets and 15-year-old just bust it out and unload that thing and carry it up 3 flights of steps.
You sure somebody wasn't watching like for, like, child labor laws or something?
Maybe. Well, that brings up that kid, that number one recruit in high school, is suing the state for not letting him profit off his NIL, right?
A lot of kids in high school are getting paid.
I know. I mean, I 100% agree the kid should be compensated. I mean, did you know the average teen model makes, like, according to jobrecruiter.com, the average teen model makes about $60,000 a year. And what are they profiting off? I mean, they're really profiting off their image, right? They're taking pictures in clothes or shoes or whatnot. They're allowed to profit off their image. Why can't a kid in high school do that? I mean, why does the state have to get in between the kid's parents and some dude that wants to plaster him all over the city? I don't understand why the state feels it has the right to do that. I mean, if the parents don't want their kid to do it, I can see that.
But what are you? I guess I'll go back to when this has been started the whole way. I mean, it goes back to General Eastman on the show. This Dr. J, his brother Paul, who unfortunately died of ALS a long time ago, one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He was at Cal Berkeley, and he was the opposite linebacker to come brain dead. The guy from he used to coach the Bears, and he coached Carolina, and now he's coaching the Redskins. What the hell's his name? Ricky, help me out here. I'll think of it. I can see the guy's face. Anyway,
the current Redskins coach.
Yeah.
Well, we shouldn't say Redskins, right?
No. The current what are they?
Commanders, right?
Commanders.
Dan Quinn. Yeah. Is that him?
No, it's a Hispanic guy.
Ron Rivera.
Ron Rivera.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was big friends with Paul, Jen's brother.
But big Monsters of the Midway guy, right?
Yeah, he was a Bear guy. He was a good player, real good player, good guy. But he, Paul was a good-looking guy. He was taking drama, and was gonna try and be in the one of the toughest unions to get in of all places is the stuntman union. I would sort of never have guessed that, but they wanted him to do some modeling in the summer, and you know, but it was like Kohl's or someplace, and he's been wearing, like, you know, flannel shirts. It's not like he's modeling, you know, below the waist with nothing on, and you know, type of thing. Just a regular old modeling. And they said, no, you can't do it. We don't. But here's the weird part, though.
Well, that's okay because that's between a union. Who?
No. This was Cal told him he couldn't do it. Cal Berkman.
Cal did.
Yeah, because they owned your. That was this whole thing was all about. They owned your name, image, and likeness. But here's the thing, though. He. I don't know if he's a special case or not a special case, but if he went and did a flannel shirt by himself, I don't see any issue with that whatsoever. But now, if he's in, you know, modeling a flannel shirt with his Cal Berkeley hat on, and they say Paul Najarian, linebacker from Berkeley, well, now I got somewhat of a problem with it because he's really marketing the Berkeley football team, not himself.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Well, maybe Berkeley should get a.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So if some young lady on the volleyball team or whatever is a runway model, she's not wearing her school jersey walking down the runway. Well, you know,
this number one recruit. I'm not sure what state he's from, but he's like the number one recruit. He plays quarterback. He's supposed to be pretty incredible at playing quarterback, but you know he's not going to be. He's not wearing his high school. I don't think he's wearing his high school gear.
But I mean, is he in the picture because he's a good looking guy, even though you wouldn't know who the hell he was, or a good looking girl, or is he there because everybody knows he's the quarterback where did Chip Hilton go to school? Mill Valley or someplace? Yeah. I mean, what are you selling? Are you selling their football, or are you selling yourself? I guess I'm kind of splitting hairs.
I think he'd be selling himself because you know, it's his name, it's his likeness, and it's his image. And it doesn't really matter what school he's playing for because he'd be able to do that at any school.
Well, what I'm saying, it's not that simple. I mean, yes, if it's a girl model and she doesn't have any, you have no idea she plays volleyball, that's about, I'll use the term, as pure as it gets. But now I know one of my buddies, you might actually have met him when you were here, his friend has a son who's doing something in high school, basketball, and he's got a six-figure shoe contract. Now, is that contract given to him because he's going to go to Ohio State, because he's going to go to Carolina? Is the same school that's given him the shoes and the money essentially directing him to go to a college? Is it really money because they want that high school program to get money and be well-known? I mean, what's it all for, I guess? You know,
well, here's
the devil's in the detail, I mean, in my opinion.
Here's an interesting point here, though. This kid, suppose he's able to get NIL money, right? Suppose these businesses in his home state or home community want to pay him a total of $1 million a year. Well, that kid then can use that money to go wherever he wants.
Therein lies the rub.
He could play at any high school in the nation.
That's where I think, and I'm not accusing him of anything. You know, I would never do that. Yeah. That's where Hal Snar, the purest economist that you are, needs to, let's say, open your eyes or open your fly or do something, because there's no way on earth that the kid, in my opinion, again, last year's Notre Dame quarterback that somehow got a bunch of money from Under Armour. And, oh, by the way, Notre Dame is an Under Armour school, and he ends up as the idea, what you just said, that Under Armour gave him 600, let's say 60, some number, pick 100,000 bucks, and he was free to go to a Nike school. Hell, not even you are that naive.
Well, I'm not saying that, but this kid here, I mean, we're talking about, you know, just businesses in his home state, or maybe it's even, you know, Adidas, but this kid gets $1 million. He has $1 million now a year. He can use that to pay tuition at any high school.
But that's not okay. I'm saying that's, in my opinion, that's not going to happen. This thing is tied together.
What I'm saying, though, is it's anti-competitive of the state to force this kid not to collect any income off his name, image, and likeness, to force him to stay in a public school that his parents can't afford to get him out of. With NIL, maybe he can afford to go to any high school in the nation.
But you, I think you were, take the economics from the purest form into more of a business form, like the mob, like the mob say. All right, you and I were giving this kid $1 million. That seems to be the number he tosses around. Why? We put him on a billboard. No one knows who the hell he is. We put him on TV. He probably can't talk. What are we? Are we investing in his future? Are we directing him to a school that we want him to go to because we're giving the school $5 million? What is the motivation here?
And I'm saying, but all that should be the purview of the parents and the people.
You can't. I don't know about that. I'm not saying the state should get involved, but what are we really doing here? Yeah.
I think that's that if he is not an adult, which he's not, then it's up to the parents acting in the best interest of their child to make these arrangements with these people who want to.
We're talking about kids, most of them don't have parents.
Yeah.
So who's signing the deal?
Well, I mean, a parent has to sign the deal because he's under.
It could be a guardian. It could be the high school coach. I mean, in those days, it used to be that. Now it's more likely the AAU coach. I'm saying this is a quagmire.
Maybe the state is benefiting on the side because the state, the coach, is. This is pure hypothetical.
Yeah.
But I can imagine a situation where a coach of a player in this player's position, not this particular one, the coach could be getting paid side money, right, for this kid's name, image, and likeness. I'm just saying that the parents or the legal guardians of this minor, they should be able to, in my opinion, negotiate with anybody that wants to pay them.
In a perfect world, I'm never going to argue.
Image, likeness.
I'm never going to argue with this stuff. All I'm saying is,
they should not interfere with that.
I'm going back to my purest story and why I'm using, a lady versus a guy. It could be a guy too.
Yeah.
She could be third string on the volleyball team, and still she's drop dead gorgeous, and she's a runway model in France or something. On weekends, and they're flying her over there. I have no problem with that young lady making that dough because she's has a talent and a blah blah blah. First of all, I don't have any problem with any of these people making the money. I'm saying, but let's not assume there's not a bazillion strings attached to all this. And what I'm saying, if you have the same, but I mean, my point is, Hal, from the economic side, she is worth $1 million to them for what she does in the other job.
Yeah.
These other people. I got news for you. A high school kid who can't put three words together, be it whatever color he is, most high school kids can't, he's not worth $1 million to those guys today. So what are they paying him for? Is it to get in early because it's a 10-year contract because they think he's going to be the next LeBron? Well, that I would understand. But if it's they get to direct him for the next 4 years, what colleges he goes to, and they get a piece of his next – I'm saying there's got to be strings
like – the parents or the legal guardians of these players.
These guys.
They're aware of that.
Oh, you think so?
Why should time have anything to do with it?
Hal, don't assume these legal guardians are Hal Snar.
Yeah. Well, because of the high chance of injury, why not let this kid profit off it?
But I'm not arguing that part. What I'm saying is your triplets, they have you and your wife. You guys aren't normal in today's world. Yeah. You're a little. You can read a contract. You're a college professor, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, why are you paying my kid $1 million? You're going to be the first question out of your mouth, right? Yeah. Okay, what's that worth it to you? What strings do you have to him? Because right now, tomorrow seems like a lot of money to me, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what's he going to do? Oh, he doesn't have to do anything for the first 2 years. Okay, let me get this straight. The girl is runway modeling. I keep saying that the girl is runway modeling tomorrow and making me money. You're saying you don't care what my kid does for 2 years. You just want to write him a check for $1 million. Well, yeah. You're going to put his name on his shoes? No, not really, because nobody knows who the hell he is. I mean, you're going to be sitting there going, what's going on here, I think.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I can see that. But, I mean, again, the company's not going to do this. I mean, a car dealership's not going to give him a bunch of money unless they believe that putting him on billboards is an increased car
sales. No, I think they're going to direct him to a school that he has to go. Somewhere in that contract is going to say, this kid has to go to a Nike school. He has to go somewhere. If they need a quarterback in Oregon, and we're an Oregon school, that's where he's going because we can tell him to go there.
Well, if that's the case, then the parents can be made aware of that. The kid can be made aware of it.
And I'm going to say,
parents and the kid agree. Why not let him sign the contract?
I think a lot of times the parents are not smart enough to hire an attorney. I think the parents are not involved. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that from the business side of it, what would possess PTI to give some high school kid $1 million if we had it? What do we get to control? Do I get 10% of his income for the rest of his life? What do I get?
Well, maybe you expect, because this kid is promoting your product, you expect higher revenues, and those higher revenues, if they exceed what they would have been without him endorsing your product or service, then you wouldn't do it. But if it exceeds it, then maybe you pull the trigger.
Yeah, and I'm saying a high school kid is sitting there, blah, 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 that doesn't, I mean, how many high school kids would, I was in college prep. I didn't know any high school kids would want to be on TV or deserve it. You know what I'm saying?
PTI's never going to make that deal with him because, but Nike, I mean, if this kid can sell shoes, maybe
there's no way on earth his name is going to be on a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
At this point.
But Nike wouldn't make the deal unless it thought it was in its best interest.
Are they signing up the best players for a school that they're going to force the kid to go to? In which case, he's an employee of Nike? Is he an employee of the school? What is he? I mean, it's one thing to say.
I mean, if his parents signed an agreement, maybe there's a clause in the contract that maybe the parents can negotiate this.
Well,
when he turns 18 and becomes an adult, he can nullify the contract or something, right?
Well, I'm real concerned about this. Not that I have any kids, or certainly not going to be me. But when you start talking about, I guess what I'm really saying here is, I keep going back to this stupid thing about the modeling. Then we'll talk about the market a little bit. Yeah. A modeling agency, I'm hiring Hal because he's a good-looking guy, and I want him with a certain hat on and wherever they make hats, in Italy or someplace, because he looks good in a hat. And I don't care whether he plays football or whether he doesn't. I'm hiring Hal because I want to hire him. Okay?
Well,
now, that's let me finish it for quick. That's one thing. If I'm hiring Hal because I get to direct him, they have to dig ditches for Joe's something-something, what am I hiring him to do? Am I hiring him on a personal service thing where I get to tell him what college he has to go to? All of a sudden, if he's not really my employee, but I'm going to direct him to somewhere else, now we get into this whole mess that is involved in college sports. It's not near as simple as Hal the Economist is making it out to be.
Yeah.
I'm
just saying that the state, in my opinion, has no right to interfere in a transaction between the parents or the legal guardians of a gifted athlete and somebody that wants to show them some money.
All right, so what?
I don't see why the state has any business doing that.
Wait, what do you get as a high school? I mean, what do they provide? Kid shows up, he's in sixth, he's a freshman. He walks in, and all of a sudden, the kid, you're providing coaching every single day. You're providing food. You're providing something for a lot of these people, and all of a sudden, at the end, you get nothing.
Well, if the kid is going to a public school and his parents are poor, I don't know anything about the kid, but if they're poor and the kid's going to a public school, he has no choice but to go there, and he could maybe get better coaching if he could afford to go to a private school. That it's all about creating the next athlete. And did you see what happened to USC's defense over the summer? They all of them collectively gained 1,400 pounds of muscle, right? In preparation of entering the Big Ten Conference, USC's defense packed on 1,400 pounds of muscle through proper nutrition and exercise, right?
I think, oh God.
And USC's a private institution, right?
I'm going to say
this kid going to public school, if he has, and he has his God-given talent, and people want to compensate him for that God-given talent. If he went to a better private school, maybe he packs on.
I want to know who the steroid seller is.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that the state has, in my opinion, has no right to tell the parents they can't sign this contract. It's up to the parents to make sure they get a good deal. It's up to the lawyers of the firm wanting to sign this kid to make sure that their client gets a good deal.
I think you have to make sure
the state has any right to interfere in that negotiation.
Here's my concern, and then we'll go to break. But my concern is, if it's PTI or Hal's Pizza, I got no problem with any of this stuff. I'm hiring him to do something. You're hiring him to do something.
I get your point. I do get your point.
But all of a sudden, it's this. We get to direct him other places, and when people start paying something way more than it looks to me like they're worth, there's got to be a string attached. Right. I mean,
but worth is subjective.
No, it's not. This happens a lot. I happen to know it happens a lot. It used to happen a lot. If you have a law firm and say you love, you know, what's the state, the guys that have the Dr. Pepper commercial, and you hire two jamokes from state to be law clerks, and they don't even really show up when you're paying them $100,000 a summer, and yet your other law clerks are making $5,000 a summer, and they actually have to show up and do something. I don't know that that necessarily is illegal, but it's somewhat untoward. What am I really hiring the person to do? If I'm hiring him because he has to play offensive line for Notre Dame or Illinois, well, then is that the employment contract? What, I mean, is that, do I have to, if I require him to do that and he gets hurt, do I pay the workman's comp? Does Notre Dame or Illinois? This is a whole, I'm saying that this is not a pure economic argument. This is a cesspool argument in my mind. If it's pure, you know I'm on your side 100%. Yeah. Nobody agrees with you more on pure economics than me. You know that. I'm just saying this is anything but pure.
The reason why I say it's pure subjective, it's up to the buyer, it's up to the seller. I mean, think about investing, for example. Some guy thinks NVIDIA is going up. Some guy thinks NVIDIA is going down.
That's pure. Right? This is not pure.
I know, but I'm just saying some people think NVIDIA is going down. Some people think NVIDIA is going up. So the guy that owns it that thinks it's going down sells it to a guy that thinks it's going up. These valuations, price, is purely subjective. And if company XYZ thinks the kid's worth $10 million a year and the parents think he's worth $10 million a year, what business is it of the state?
My point is $10 million a year...
contract can be signed.
I refuse to be as pure as you want it to be. $10 million for what?
Well,
He's not worth $10 million as a law clerk. He's not even here. So what am I really paying for?
But it's purely subjective. Who cares if the kid gets $10 million a year?
I mean, I
say good for him. I applaud him.
I just want... You're not into this. If he's being paid $10 million to pay quarterback for Notre Dame, do it. Have Notre Dame pay the kid. Have them have workman's comp. If he gets hurt and he needs brain surgery 15 years from now, they should pay for it like somebody else. That's not what's happening now. This is a cesspool.
I think the government makes it a cesspool.
I think
its rules and regulations create the situations where an offensive lineman is hired to be a law clerk when they're not a law clerk. I think that intervention by the NCAA and the state getting in between these contracts between a player and some company that wants to benefit or profit, maybe even lose off the NIL of this player, right? The company has a lot to lose if the player gets hurt. All of a sudden, their investment is, you know, worth
the fabrication that these people are not employees. That's what I'm.
Oh, I think they're employees.
Well, you do, but you may think so, but they're not considered.
Yeah. They should be considered employees of the university.
Well, but they're not. They're not.
Yeah, but they should be. But that's what I'm saying.
I'm saying
because they provide value to the university.
Well, yeah. The whole idea. Well, we got to go to break here, but the whole thing. I'm in order for economics to work like I think you want it to work, and I want it to work.
And it'll never work like that because I'm out of the herd, man. So it's never going to work like that.
Well, I mean, once there's a payoff, once there's something else, it doesn't work like that. I mean, economics. If you don't have normal bidding for a road project, and a few people get the job for 40% higher than they should, economics like you like to see and like I like to see is already out the window. Now the question is how far.
Oh, it is. Yeah, because the best friend's brother's daughter's getting.
Yeah. Now, okay. Why do you play George Snar in this country? In this company, it looks to me like he doesn't do crap. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean? He's the one who knows the mayor. And by the way, he's dating the mayor's daughter, and that's why we got the job. Well, okay. Then all of a sudden, now it's not an arm's length transaction. Now it's not.
I have a great uncle, Snar. He's not my. He's like a second cousin, but he's like this great uncle. And he gave a speech one time, and I thought he was a pretty interesting guy. I found out that he made a bunch of money putting billboards up in Utah. Every 10 feet there was a billboard. It looked like Saudi Arabian Road, right, where there's a billboard every 10 feet. And then Lady Bird Johnson, and how did he get those contracts? He probably had friends in state government, right?
Well, I think
Lady Bird Johnson had a road cleanup like project, and he got paid money to take them down.
Yeah, well, I think when they put the interstate highway system together, there's supposed to be some limit on how close you can be in billboards. You ever drive from Florida, Atlanta. They got they're coming out and smacking you. They're so close.
Yeah, I mean, it's like in Saudi Arabia. I remember in Jeddah, we were peered up, and we got adopted by an American family living in Jeddah. Four of my friends and I, they would take us and feed us dinner, and they would serve us homemade alcohol and wine because it was illegal off the American base. But I remember riding the bus from the pier, which was just desert, and every 10 feet on this two-lane road for probably 20 miles was just billboard after billboard after billboard that I couldn't read.
For what? For what products?
I don't know. Just every kind of product. Every 10 feet, it seemed like 10 yards, there was a billboard on this two-lane road, one lane in one direction, one lane in the other direction, and then just desert.
The thing ever, when the wind blew, did the road get all full of sand?
we drove on it, and there was no wind blowing, right? But it was just crazy seeing all these billboards. And my uncle Doug Snar, he made a lot of money putting up the billboards, and he made a lot of money taking them down.
S&P's down 28, NASDAQ's down 123. Go to a real quick break. Hey, I want your opinion, and I don't know if you have a chance to listen in last Thursday. We had Tommy Grisafi on here. He's a Board of Trade guy. You know, he's kind of an expert on all things farming and the economics of farming. And you should grab that interview, not because I'm on it, because he's on it. Play it for your class, and Kevin should do the same thing. I'll talk about that after the break. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Cardo on the board. S&P futures down 26. NASDAQ futures down 109. We'll come back here a little bit. Again, individual stocks in the Dow. The one that's getting whacked here pretty good is Boeing, down 659. And somebody downgraded them as they, the space station they had trouble with. They've got problems with the 787. They still got they've been in trouble now for 3, 4, 5 years, and they got the new CEO. We hope they get their act back together. But right now, I don't know that they are being held in such huge high regard by most people. Do you think, Al? I mean, the company seems to have their PR issues, and they're not really PR issues when you start talking about doors blowing off and things like that. You don't know if it's a culture, whether it's just a couple of bad breaks along the way. You don't know what it is, whether all of a sudden the people there are not as professionally driven as maybe they used to be. It's hard to judge a whole generation of people like that. I was just going to mention before the break, we've been talking a lot, Hal, and you've been certainly part of this discussion, is when whenever anybody does something, and if anybody listens to Hal and me joust all the time, it's always kind of about the same thing. When somebody enters a discontinuity into the system. Right? How's that for a word this hour, Ricky? What do you think? Discontinuity into the system. Somehow economically, I mean, I don't think Hal or I is, well, he's the PhD economist, I'm not, whether we can predict the market, whether we can predict this happening in the future, the day, the time, the amount, I'm going to say neither one of us, maybe he could, but I sure as hell can't. Now, on the other hand, if you tell me in this industry, somehow or another, somebody's either paid way too much or somebody's paid way too little, I'm going to say over the next few years, expect these few things to happen, and I can't tell you when it's going to happen or anything like that. Whenever you talk about it, a discontinuity being the, you know, the Fed puts more money in the system than they're supposed to, or maybe this happens in some other place, or some law grabs one side or affects one side versus the other. I think both Hal and I are perfectly capable of saying these five things are going to happen down the road, and the now I can't tell you the date, but you can sort of you know, plan on it. Well, Tommy comes on, and we were talking about the farm economy, and you and I were saying, in terms of the markets, and you and I have discussed it a lot of times about when excess money comes in, and some people seem to get it and some people don't, asset prices do a certain sort of thing versus regular prices. It tends to benefit the lessor rather than the lessee. Well, without even any kind of prompting, Tommy on Thursday said, what's the state of the farm market? And guess what he says, Hal? It depends which farm market you're talking about. And I go, okay, I'll bite. He goes, if you're an owner of property, you're fat and happy, you're richer than the dreams of avarice. That you never thought you'd get there. Yet if you're some schmuck who is leasing property, paying fertilizer, paying a seed, trying to sell corn or soybeans, you either got a second job or you're broke or you're somewhere. The difference is it's almost like, you know, the sharecroppers at one point. I mean, it's almost to that stage. He goes, because these farm prices, I think they're up to $11,000 an acre or so, I'm not even sure. He goes, there's people who are selling off 10% of their farm, paying off their mortgage. Mm-hmm. They never dreamed that the property would be worth this much. Yet the people who work there, because you're not even making any money hardly on the corn itself, unless you own the place. I mean, that's
the Austrian business cycle theory of inflation, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, the Fed creates an inflation. These property values in New York and farm properties, they you know, it's an asset. They go up, and the owners of the property, I mean, that's how people in Weimar Republic, Germany, they were using rents, inflated rents, to pay the principal on a 30-year note, right? An inflated rent. After, you know, a couple of years of compounding through inflation, you know, the rents are incredible. They take a 1 month's rent payment, pay off, you know, the principal on a note. I mean, so to me, it's just, this goes back to this idea that it's not a helicopter that distributes the money. The money goes, these piles of money get placed in the hands of people who are probably already well-to-do, and they benefit because they can buy an asset before the inflation happens, or they can sell an asset after the inflation happens. And so on that regard, I think there's one thing that we know for sure: the Fed is going to print money, and you know the stock market is going to go higher. So if you're just long in stock market, you're probably going to do very well. Now, the ups and downs, I have no interest in watching the ups and downs. All I know is that the central bank is going to print money, and that stock market's going up over time.
Well, brings me to the the question. I hope, you know, somebody somewhere writes a book and explains it, but maybe you can do it right now. I've seen in my lifetime two of these events. I mean, there's been little events along the way, but two major events, inflation events. One was the late 60s through the early 80s, maybe mid 80s. And then there's this time. Well, they're, in terms of the inflation, they're somewhat very similar, although the COVID really made this one more, they're similar, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
But in those days, the government was not able to have a 1.5% interest rate while your inflation rate was 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Yet this time, somehow they pulled that off. I think the somehow is they expanded the balance sheet, and every time something tried to move down, like a bond, which would mean the interest rates would go up, they went out and bought it. So people were afraid, like me and my clients, we were afraid to sell them because we figured if we started selling, the Fed's going to start buying them. Not PTI, the Fed's watching us, but in general, that trade was very hard. I mean when the TLT is trading 96, when it was at 140, I don't think there's any doubt, and certainly no doubt in my mind, that the thing was a screaming short. Yet if you sold it, went down to 38, 37, you were to think, well, now what this thing's going, I'm going to buy some puts here. All of a sudden, the next week, the Fed's buying something, it's right back to 140. I mean, you got clobbered 100 times along the way. It wasn't as easy as just shorting it at 140, going to Tahiti for 5 years and coming back and seeing it at 96. I mean, if you actually were trying to do it any given time, you got a jam where the sun don't shine 100 times because the Fed didn't want that to happen. Well, in 1970, they didn't decide to have a how many trillion dollar balance sheet, and they were just going to buy it from everybody, and they were going to drive it, that the Fed was going to, the Treasury was going to put out a borrowing, and the Fed was going to write out and buy it back. I mean, that didn't happen in the 70s. And so individual people were actually able to get 10, 12, 13% interest where if you had cash, you never got hurt by inflation. Now, this time, if you kept your money in cash, you're screwed. Your $1 million is worth 600, maybe, right? It's the handling of it by the government this time seems a lot more almost sinister, doesn't it?
Well, I think one of the big differences back then, they couldn't bottle that inflation up. Today, they can bottle it up. The Fed can buy as many bonds as it wants and not affect a change in the federal funds rate because they've got so many unemployed reserves, so many excess reserves, unemployed reserves, because they have a new tool. And they got this new tool in 2008. It was supposed to be given to them in 2011, I think. But as a response to the financial crisis, Congress rolled it out 3 years earlier. And it's called interest on reserves. And it works as a minimum wage, a binding minimum wage. The thing is binding. That's why we have so many reserves in the banking system. So now when the Fed buys, however they do it, buys more treasuries or sells treasuries, because there's so many of these excess reserves in the system, they can buy as many as they want, they can sell as many as they want in a range, and the federal funds rate will basically remain unchanged because it is, the interest on reserves rate is a binding minimum wage, a binding minimum rate of interest on reserves. So they can keep it bottled up. And the problem with that, though, is it leaks out. And how does it leak out? Well, it leaks out in the form of loans to prime lenders. The Fed makes loans to banks. Banks pay interest to the Fed. They charge a slightly higher interest rate to a billionaire or whoever, these prime lenders, and the bank makes an arbitrage profit off that. The net interest on these loans they make to these people, and these are big and big time investors, right? Elites of elites. That money leaks out, and that's why you're seeing Detroit Lion ticket prices. The average ticket price of a Detroit Lions football game is like $250, right? These receivers are scoring $30 million per year salaries. And I don't begrudge any of them. But all of this is a result of all this money leaking out of a system that is trying to keep all the money the Fed is printing trapped. And that money leaks out and it creates incredible appreciation in certain asset classes. And it's doing that with NVIDIA, it's doing that with NFL properties, it's doing that with farm ground, right? So this is all Austrian business cycle theory. The Fed creates all this money, it tries to bottle it up, it can't bottle it all up, and it leaks out and creates incredible price appreciation in certain asset classes.
We have some people able to borrow money at less than inflation rate.
Which is
danger for everybody else.
You look at margin debt, or leverage, you know? Okay, total lending by banks is up. It's growing at the same pace as it was pre-pandemic, right? Even though interest rates are higher than they were, consumer lending is, total lending in the economy is up. So the Fed is still creating money. Just think if it didn't have interest on reserves. What would our inflation be if it didn't have interest on reserves? If it didn't have a way to keep that money in the banking system?
Well, it'd be even worse. But some of the stuff, I mean, I went through these calculations last week. The thing that set me off was, where the hell was I going on Thursday? And I'm probably coming to work, and they said the difference between Scottie Scheffler winning this, well, he ended up winning, $25 million was the first prize in this, what do they call FedEx it now? Cup. They call it, well, now it's this FedEx Cup. It used to be the BMW thing, was it? Now it's the FedEx Cup? Whatever. The difference between the first and second place, $25 million and $12.5 million, was three times the amount of money that Palmer and Nicholas made in their entire career.
Yeah.
I mean, so they combined made $4 million. And how many wins did they both have, for God's sake? You sit there going, a long time ago. The Masters champion in 1980 won $55,000. This year they made $3.6 million.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, okay, well, by the way, what does our CPI say?
Yeah.
If you put 1980 in there as a dollar, what is a dollar worth in 1980? It's like $4.10 today.
Yeah.
So it's four times. Well, if you do the math, $55,000 goes into Jethro, you know, 3.6, like 65 times.
Yeah.
So now that's a difference. If you were to take my Cub tickets in 1982 when I first got them in the upper deck, first row, by, you know, in the infield box, I think they were, I'm going to say $3.75, but say $5, which I think is high. All right, four times $5 is 20. I'll bet they're 85 or 90. I don't think they're 100 yet on the upper deck, but they're probably pretty freaking close. We look at this stuff, and it's just like, but it goes back to you and I, you know, we're doing the show. And when you talk about an interest rate in France that's negative, right? It sound, you hear it all day long, and it bounces off your head, and pretty soon it doesn't resonate very much. But if you're in my business even more than Hal's, I'm going to sit there and say, let's say, I suspect your dad's not still around, but if he was, in fact, I know he's not still around, but if he was, and Papa Snar comes in, and he drops me, you know, out of one of his wallets, I'm sure he probably carried two, he gives me $10 million to manage. And I say, okay, well, $10 million, all these other guys are going to charge a percent and a half. And I'm saying, I'll be real nice. Since I know your son, Hal, I'll do this for a half a percent for you for a year, which is, you know, some places we charge that, other places we don't. Anyway, it's a long story, PTI, but we don't charge very much, okay? On a relative basis. Now, what would happen, Hal, if I went out and bought a bond at a price at which I'm going to lose money on it, meaning negative interest rates? So I put Papa Snar's money in a European bond at a negative interest rate, and, oh, by the way, I'm charging you half a percent. Even you, Mr. No Holds Barred, everything's okay in the economy, is going to say, what the bleep? what are you doing? Now, the simple fact is, I would hopefully, oh boy, if I ever did, I would hopefully never be stupid enough to do that. Okay, why would I ever take somebody's money, invest in something where I know they're going to lose even more, and charge him to do it? I mean, that can't happen, Hal. I mean, if anybody has an ounce of gray matter left, that can't happen. And yet, people are doing it. Now we say, okay, who the hell are those people? Well, it's going to be, first of all, it's the government. The government's buying their own crap back at a price at which they're going to lose money at it. And you're going to sit there and go, why are they doing that? No rational person would do that, and yet they are. Now, how many insurance companies and banks own these 10 and 30-year, I'll just stick with the 10s, own the 10-year bond? Well, I guess the bond's, 10-year's still a bill, right? A note, 10-year note, at they bought it at 1.5%, and they're trading 3.8. Now 3.8 doesn't seem high. Actually, it's 3.9. Well, I'm going to guess if they did it 2 years ago, that thing is buried underwater on their balance sheet, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they paid 130 for it, and it's trading for 90. right, or 92. 30-year definitely would be. The 10-year maybe not so much because it's, you know, we got 7 more years to amortize. But now it's sitting there. And you say, well, okay, but now if now her problem with daddy Hal, Hal's daddy is sitting here now at PTI. If I were to do that, and I paid $135 for something that's now trading $90, your dad gets his statement. And he's going to go, how the hell did you lose 45 points on a bond, you idiot? And oh, by the way, you're charging me. I mean, he's going to see that, right? And, yeah. But everything's marked to market. But now if we're the government and the banks, the insurance company, bought that from me, the government, I'm going to say, well, wait a minute, I'll pass a law that says you guys don't have to mark to market, even though I do for all my clients. So if I were to say, don't worry, Daddy Hal, it's still on your bill. I mean, when I send you the PTI sheets every month, it's still there at 125 we paid for it, even though it's trading at 95. If I were to be able to do that, I might be able to say, don't worry about it. Don't tell your son, but don't worry about it. See, it's still 125 when it's not. And all of a sudden, now you got banks that are telling you, I'm okay, it's still 125, or insurance companies. No wonder they're raising their rates. Oh, it's okay. No, it's to who, Al? I mean, but like you say, the rules change. That's the same thing with, same argument as the name, image, and likeness. What are the details here? What are we really doing, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a movie explains it all. I watched this incredible Dutch film with English subtitles, and it stars Mads Mikkelsen. And it's called The Promised Land. It's about the Heat. And I tell you, it explains all. I don't think anything has changed. I think you have the kings and pawns, as Napoleon said in the movie Count of Monte Cristo, right? Kings and pawns. You have the attitude of the elites, that everybody else is just a peasant. And you see that with guys like Robert Reich, or the op-ed that came out. I think he had an op-ed come out about free speech and how...
You can name 10 guys here if they feel that way.
But it gives you a clear picture of how the elites in the United States, political elites in the United States, and the elites in Europe view everybody else. We're just peasants. And they provide us with this illusion of freedom. And I think the freedom that we're provided, the freedom they want us to be provided with, are the vices. We're free. This isn't a religious thing, right? We're free to engage in vice, right? We're liberated from morality. We can do all we want with porn and alcohol and binging and consumerism. We have the freedom to do all that, right? They've liberated us from...
Well, hell, if your sniffer's working and you came to Chicago, you'd think the whole city was high.
Yeah, exactly. So they liberated us, right? That's what the left thinks of as liberty. We're free to engage in whatever debauchery that we want, but it's actually a trap. So that's what the elites have done, right? That's what the elites have done. They view us as peasants, and it goes back to the book 1984.
Let me interrupt real quick. Yeah. When you say elites, you keep saying political elites. I don't think it's the political elites. I think it's the money elites. I think the guys elites, like Musk, who thinks he's gonna. I mean, I'm not really happy with the Brazilian government, but all of a sudden he's going to tell the Brazilian government what to do. Who the hell is he? Just say he owns a company. I mean, I think he's a pretty bright guy, but I mean, really? I mean, one guy buys a newspaper. He wants to tell the government what to do and everybody else what to do. I think the money elites. It's certainly not Representative Joe Jamoke from Iowa.
I don't think Elon Musk is a favorite of these political elites, these monetary elites that we're talking about, because he is allowing people to express themselves in ways they weren't allowed to express themselves just a couple of years ago. And so I don't think he's in the club. I think Elon is now out of the club. I think RFK Jr. is out of the club. And so they're not gonna be invited to these European and American globalist tea parties anymore, right? I'm not invited to the tea parties amongst mainstream economists. I'm outside, and I.
Oh, you'd be like a fart in church in there.
Exactly right. I'd be a fart in church in the Austrian circles, because I do like mathematical models and I do like statistical models, and I think they can, using micro level data, that I think they can provide us with great insight. And I take pride in not being a part of any herd. But, you know, this movie, it's just incredible. It shows you just the complete lack of respect for just everyday people. It is a mirror of what's going on today.
Can you imagine if you and I and Carl and Kevin and a couple other people from the show, Russell, if we sat every other stool in a bar at Jackson Hole or Davos and people had to sit between us and talk to us?
We would be vacation in Gitmo.
I think we'd either be tossed or nobody would sit there. They'd open up another bar someplace.
Yeah, they would. They would just, you know, take $1 billion and build it overnight.
So you mean sitting between you and Carl? Some guy with $1 gazillion that flew in his Gulfstream. The guy'd sit there and go, I paid how much for this?
Well, that actually happened to me at a conference, an economics conference in Minnesota. Everybody's listening to this Fed president speak, and I just kind of like blurted out something that was so anti-establishment, so outside of the mainstream of economic thought. And the dude looked at me, and it was quiet in there because everybody's eating. They're not listening to this guy. There's nobody listening to this guy. And he's just reading his prepared remarks. He looks up at me above his glasses, his reading glasses, and he looks back down and continues to read his prepared remarks.
Well, but Paul talking last week, the inflation was brought upon by supply chain, was brought upon by COVID. Yeah. All of a sudden, I see Hal in the background, burn, burn. But I mean, you almost feel like you want to, don't you? As sophomoric as it is.
I think a lot of people are onto these people, and I think it's scary to them. I mean, that's the problem with tyranny, is the tyrant lives in a constant state of fear. And they'll do whatever they can to hang on to that power. And right now it's snuffing out a few of these billionaires that are, you know, and these very people from these very powerful political families who are saying, man, I'm not going along with this. And, you know, Elon Musk better be careful if he ever flies into Paris, France. He might be jailed by that tyrant in Paris.
Well, the only problem with that dude I see is, He's, you know, I don't know the guy personally, but he seems to reserve the right to censor when he feels like it.
Exactly. Well, I don't think Twitter's censoring anybody right now.
He's been kicking people off. I'm saying he, you know, what do they say? All power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts. I mean, he seems to reserve the right that he doesn't want Brazil to be able to censor, but he can kick somebody off. He doesn't like them.
Yeah.
You know, so
I don't think that's going on a lot on Twitter. I think in Twitter, as long as it's respectful, I think people are having discussions. I think people are having conversations that weren't allowed to happen.
Yeah, there's people on the show that might disagree that that it's the way it's filtered. Some people are tossed.
Yeah,
I'm just saying
it's still probably going on, but it was really bad.
But how do you? We got a dash here, but I mean, it's if you go back to you get to. Say whatever you want in the town square, and you know if you want to post something, at least somebody's gonna see you creeping up there with your little hammer and nail and throwing it on the town square, or if you get on the pulpit down there, wherever you want to call it, and started talking, at least people knew it was you. This idea of anonymous insulting people and stuff—that's
the one problem with Twitter.
Yeah,
I say driver's license, credit card, and your name. No, none of this. You know, hiding behind some avatar, right?
Yeah.
If you're on Twitter, we should know who it is, right? Not a robot. There's too many robots on Twitter. I agree, but man, you got to supply a driver's license and a credit card to verify, and a cell phone number to verify that it is you. And if you want the paid service, they'll charge you. If you don't want the paid service, fine. But everybody should have to supply a credit card.
What about how about I sneak Ricardo's driver's license, we all go on under his name.
Well, but one driver's license, one person, not one driver's license, 10 people.
No, we all want to be Ricardo Garcia. I mean, he might not want to be it anymore.
What was Mitt Romney's fake account on Twitter? Do you remember what that was?
Oh, I don't know. I heard about it, but I don't remember the name. God.
El Dago Dorigo or something?
El Dorito? That's not bad. El Dorito. I like that. God. We got a dash. S&P futures down 33. NASDAQ futures down 123. What do you think, Ricky? El Dorito?
That's right.
El Dorito. No, you know what? You're going to get sued for that, for using the Dorito term. God.
Well, we didn't say Dorito. We said El Dorito.
Ah, okay. God. We'll be back tomorrow. On that note, we'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.